Hello, Vashon. This is Dev Speaks. I am your host, Chris Austin. And joining me today, well, coming back, actually, is Nin Gray, an advocate for the Dev Project.
Hi, Chris.
Welcome.
Thank you. It's good to be back on the show.
Always a pleasure to have you. And today, we have a pretty interesting topic, I think, is going to be germane to a lot of people on the island, given what's going on in the world with the pandemic and whatnot. And the topic is safer planning. Well, let me back up a little bit. Could you tell us a little bit about Dove itself and what your job as an advocate involves?
Yeah, I'm happy to. So Dove is Vashon Island's domestic violence agency. And we serve survivors of domestic violence and sexual assault because there's not a sexual assault agency on the island. And we provide services to survivors that include... Well, first of all, we just listen to see what it is that people are asking for. Certainly, no one size fits all. So people come to us for a variety of reasons. And sometimes people come to us and they're not even sure. They may not even ever use the words domestic violence. So they might be in a relationship that they have some questions about, and they might be looking for a referral for a therapist, for example. Incidentally, we do have an in-house therapy program that has just started. Our mental health counselor, Rashawn Mengli, is currently full at the time of this recording and the time of airing the show. But we do have, she has a small caseload. And so we do offer that, but we do a lot of referrals for that. But advocacy is different from mental health counseling or therapy in that the advocate, I kind of look at domestic violence and sexual assault advocacy as that, like, we're sort of, in terms of service providing, in the center of a wheel, and we bring the survivor there with us in the center, and we look out at the different spokes of the wheel, and we listen to what the survivor is asking for in terms of, do they need legal assistance? Do they need housing? Do they need safety planning, which is the topic of today, and we'll talk a little bit more about what that is. Do they need resources other than that? Do they need social service resources? Do they need to get signed up for health insurance? So some of what we do is just provide, go out on all of those different spokes based on what people are asking for, which could be different every time they meet with us. The same person might have a different need the next time they come to our door. So, or call us on the phone, as it were, which we did a lot of during the pandemic because we were working remotely. So anyway, we do a lot of that, just sort of helping people get to what they need. And that might be 5 minutes from then, or it might be 5 months from then. Not everything is just right at our fingertips, but trying to work with the survivor based on whatever plan they tell us is going to work for them.
You know, it almost sounds like that Dove is an expert in knowing who the experts are.
We try to be, and that can be a moving target sometimes, again, especially just to reference these COVID times that we're currently talking about and in right now. It's been those resources kind of keep shifting and changing. But yeah, trying to figure out who is the best community partner, or perhaps in the larger sense, county community partner to help assist the people that we serve.
And I'm sure most of the people that you serve, when they come to you, they don't even know what's available. This is probably the first time it's happened in their life. And I need this outside guidance. And what's out there? I don't know.
That's so true. And so it might be that they need something in the way of a new apartment or, a new living situation, or they might need legal representation or legal consultation, and they've never, as you said, even thought about a family law attorney, for example, or don't know how to navigate the court system. A domestic violence protection order is civil court. It's not criminal court if there has not been a criminal arrest. So navigating, what does that paperwork look like? How do you file it? Do I have to go in person, et cetera, et cetera? So navigating those systems if you've never had to before, and even if you don't need something like food assistance or a new apartment, you might want a therapist that really has knowledge of coercive control and the dynamics of domestic violence, and not just see any old therapist, but see one who specifically is familiar with domestic violence. So you know, it's trying to direct people to the right resource that's going to fit their needs.
Well, I can't imagine, navigating the monolith that is the legal system and you're, you know, harried to begin with, or you wouldn't need this service and at your wit's ends, perhaps. So in today's topic, the title kind of threw me, you know, I misread it first. I thought it said safety planning, but this is safer planning. What's the difference?
That's right. So a lot of what we do is we call it safety planning. And a lot of advocates are familiar with that term. And it is a lot of what we do. But there's a woman who, her name is Jill Davies. And I've done some trainings with her. And she's written, authored some papers on this topic of safer planning. And done some trainings with the Washington State Coalition Against Domestic Violence, which is our state coalition, and on safer planning. So she kind of breaks it down as safety is this sort of universal thing that would be awesome if everyone had, you know, and we believe safety belongs to all beings. But when you look at safety in its truest sense, you would really have someone who had no violence in their life, their economic needs met, no experiences of cultural bias or racism or gender discrimination, right? Like safety as an idea would be awesome for all of us, but it's not usually necessarily possible. And a lot of safety planning is sort of predicated on this idea that, okay, when the survivor is ready to leave their physical battering situation, how can we help them do it in the safest way? Safer planning encapsulates a broader idea of how can this person who is surviving abusive behaviors be safer regardless of whether they choose to leave their situation or regardless of whether they choose to stay or whether they have to stay. So there's a variety of reasons why, you know, someone might stay in their situation. For example, if a survivor has children with their partner who has abusive behaviors, the survivor could be worried about the impact of the children. They could be worried about how they're going to afford to leave. They could be committed to the family or the relationship based on maybe their own personal values or maybe, say, faith values or any other ones. They have this idea of family. They don't want to break up the family. So they're not quite ready to leave yet. Or maybe they even do leave, but they share children with the person, their partner with abusive behaviors. And in this way, they haven't really been able to fully leave, right? As long as you still share children and there's custody arrangements, you are still having to interact with their other parent. And that can be tricky. So also sometimes, frankly, leaving is more dangerous, right? It's survivors are very skilled at keeping themselves safe and surviving their abuse. And they've learned strategies and techniques and tactics to do this throughout the years. And so once a survivor actually stands up to their partner with abusive behaviors and says, look, I'm leaving, that can be actually where the survivor's in, starting where the survivor's in more danger. And survivors, you know, have to navigate difficult systems. So abusers can take advantage of those systems, like using abusive use of litigation, for example, taking the survivor back to court again and again, draining them financially, having them take time off from work so they can go to court dates about modifying parenting plans, for example, right? We see this a lot. So the abuse doesn't necessarily stop after someone leaves. So safer planning is this idea of how can we make sure the children are safe enough, right? That they have their basic needs met, and that the survivor is safer than they were before they started doing this planning. And it's very fluid, and it's victim-centered, survivor-centered. So we're not telling them, look, this is what you got to do. You got to do this and you got to do that. It's not like there's one formula or one plan that kind of fits everybody. It's very custom-tailored to each person we serve.
Well, I'm sure it's a different situation in everybody that walks in the door. And you know, I've been involved with Dove for several years now. And when I explain that to someone, one of the first things they'll always say is, why don't they just leave? And as you just, you know, elicited, there's a lot of reasons they can't leave. You know, they got kids. They might be financially bound to this person. So it's nice that there are services they could go to Dove and say, how do I make it so that, what are the tools that I could have at my disposal to make life safer for me and my children or my pets? I mean, you think if you leave, I'll kill the dog. You know, that is blackmail.
Some survivors stay in their situation for exactly that reason, Chris. They are actually worried about their pets, or here on the island, you know, farm animals. I've known a person, this was years ago, but they told me they couldn't leave because they had geriatric farm animals and they didn't know how to rehome them or what to do. That would take some time and they were just going to stick it out because of these animals, literally. And animals can be family for some people.
Absolutely.
And then certainly when we're talking about human children, that can be very complicated. You know, why don't they just leave? It's a very simplistic way to look at it. And I definitely agree with you. I've heard that a lot before, as if leaving solves everything. I also think there's this myth that there's this amazing, incredible streamlined network that all a survivor has to do is just call a domestic violence agency and say, I'm ready to leave. And then they magically get whisked away with all of the services they need and all of their needs taken care of. When in fact, you know, resources are very thin. And while we do have an incredible network in this area, Washington State has got a lot to offer in terms of support for survivors of domestic violence. But the truth is, you know, resources can be very stretched very thin given the time. Certainly, when we're recording this right now and airing it, you know, we're in the COVID pandemic still, and advocates are, you know, agencies are do not have full employee loads. They're short on advocates and resources are stretched very thin. So it's not like there's some magic wand that suddenly makes, once a person decides to leave, it's like they're instantly in a new life. That can take years, literal years, to navigate. And so how in the meantime can someone stay safe? And also, frankly, sometimes people, for whatever valid reason, don't leave their situation. Maybe the, say, for example, it's an older couple. And it's just according to the person who's maybe the target of some bullying or emotional abuse, for example, just sort of like, well, that's just the way it is. It's just going to be this way. They'll never change. And, you know, I know how to, at least I know how to not set them off, kind of thing, right? So someone like that is absolutely welcome to come chat with us about, well, let's see, let's talk about how within the context of your relationship, which you have no intention of ever changing, and that's okay, by the way, how can we stay safe in it? How can we keep you safer within the context of this relationship? Or perhaps it's someone whose adult child is struggling with substance abuse, for example, or they've been incarcerated and then they're out of jail, but they're back home living at home with mom for a while. Maybe they have some abusive behaviors or tendencies. You know, in that situation, it's maybe the adult child that's abusive to the older parent. And older parents are not going to turn their child back into the police or, you know, kick them out on the streets. I mean, we've heard that a lot from some of our elders. So they're wondering what can we do? What strategies can we employ within the context of this abusive situation to stay safer as we're in it?
Yeah. So I would think that for many survivors, if they plan to leave, it's incremental. You know, it starts out with a phone call or a quick visit. But I think it's so important to have Dove on the island for that, but also because we're rural King County and we're on an island and we don't have a lot of services. So somebody, it's much harder, I would imagine, for someone to leave the island to go seek, you know, some kind of resources in Seattle, to leave Vashon rather than say leave Renton, you know, just drive up the freeway and you're there. Whereas why are you leaving the island? You know, what do you have to go over there for? And to have your services here on the island, I think is so important.
Well, yeah, and I think there's this myth, Chris, that, you know, oh, well, I've gone back to my abuser. I left, but I went back. So now Dove won't serve me because they're going to be mad at me that I went back to them. And I don't know, I would just love to clear up any confusion around that because we absolutely have no judgment. I feel like people who don't leave their abusive situations are very much the targets of victim blaming, which is a topic we've talked about in the past on this show, actually, and of judgment. So think about law enforcement getting called to a scene where maybe a neighbor hears some loud noises, fighting, glass broken or whatever, so calls the law enforcement. And law enforcement shows up and they're trying to figure out what's going on. And, you know, no one is really saying what's going on, right? Survivor's not wanting her partner, who is maybe the sole source of her income or father of her children, to get hauled away to jail. So she just stays quiet. And say the next time this happens, several months later, a year later, she calls the police for another domestic violence incident, right? Every time that police show up to a situation where the survivor has not left or has left and returned, they have a judgment about it. They're perhaps less patient, less understanding, maybe even a little less compassionate. And it's not, it's a very normal human reaction. I'm not trying to throw law enforcement under the bus here. Their jobs are not easy and they're not advocates, nor are they therapists. So they don't really know what they're walking into. They just kind of see what they see at the moment and they can't really hold all the facts if they don't have them. So I'm not trying to go off on a tangent about that, but what I'm saying is I think it's very common experience for survivors to be judged or blamed if they don't leave, certainly with friends or family who'd say, why don't you just leave?
Right.
And if someone doesn't, they get less compassion. They have less support. And that's really tricky. So it makes it even more crucial for us in our work as advocates at Dove to extend that understanding, that compassion, without any judgment, to really hold space for people in their own process for safer planning.
Yeah, well, you know, I think another myth that needs to be kind of addressed is the fact that Dove's job isn't blaming anybody. You know, we're not going after this abusive partner. We're not saying you did it or didn't do it. That's not our job. We're helping the person that walked in the door.
That's absolutely right. And we serve survivors and we believe survivors. So it really depends on what the person is asking for at the time. Maybe the thing that seems like the most obvious solution to even us as advocates might not be top on the priority list for that survivor. And we really have to listen and be in tune with what is being requested of us, because survivors have a sense of timing and strategy for what it is they need and when they need it. I, in Jill Davies' lecture that I was refreshing myself with last night in preparation for our talk today, and had done this training earlier last year, but she brought up this really kind of funny analogy of, like, imagine going into a restaurant and the waiter just comes up right away before they even greet you and give you the special of the day. But what if that special is something you don't like or you have an allergy to? And they're like, no, you're going to love it. Trust me, this is what you're going to have for dinner. Or what if you order the pasta dish because it looks really good and the waiter's like, you know what, honey, I thought I'd bring you the salad instead because, you know, you could really use a salad. Right? It's like, could you imagine going into a restaurant and not getting what you ordered? And you're like, no, wait a minute, I would like to order this. So it's a funny analogy, but it's so true. It's like we're not in the position to tell people, like, give them the special of the day. No, no, you really need this housing voucher. No, no, you really need this attorney. No, no, you really need this protection order. We would never do that. Or we wouldn't say, well, what you're asking for this, but what you actually need is that. That just wouldn't serve the clients who walk through our door. So in this way, we really want to honor the survivor at the center of their own story. And we take a victim-centered approach. And I use the word victim or survivor interchangeably because some people resonate with one term over another. Some people prefer neither term. Mm. So we try to really pay attention to how people are self-identifying when they're talking about their own situation. But yeah, I think it's keeping the person who's seeking our services central to their own safer planning, safety planning, advocacy is really what we strive to do.
Let's say somebody listens to this show and they want to avail themselves to your services. Can you just step us through like how that would work? How best them to get your services?
Absolutely. So we've got a great website that staff have worked really hard on revamping. I think it's a really accessible, user-friendly, pops right up on a Google search. So there's ways to contact us through our website, phone, email, or even text, because our advocacy line is mobile phone, so we receive text. Sometimes it's safer for people to reach out. It's more discreet to text rather than talk, so that works too. We have limited in-person appointment time, so people can reach out and just say, hey, I'm wanting to know if I can talk with an advocate about my situation. It can be very general, very vague, and very broad. If we're not the right resource for that person, we might try to connect them with a better resource. So if someone comes and maybe say, we don't necessarily assess that there's a pattern of power and control in their relationship, and maybe they're just in sort of a toxic kind of relationship, or they're having a struggle with a neighbor or something like that, right? We would still provide that listening ear. And then we might suggest, hey, you know, Youth and Family Services is a great therapist down there. Have you thought about talking with someone regularly? Or, hey, it sounds like you need to call Solid Ground because they do landlord-tenant advocacy, et cetera. So if we're not the right avenue of support, we will hopefully redirect that person to the better avenue of support. But also sometimes people contact us and it takes a while to build some rapport. So they don't necessarily unveil all of the truth of their situation right away. So just because we don't assess abusive patterns right away doesn't mean we dismiss someone. You know, we're not in a hurry to shoo people away. We just want to kind of see what they're needing and why they've come to us. Why Dove? But yeah, so our hours are Monday through Friday, text, email, phone, and then limited in-person appointments that have to be scheduled. So we're still in these COVID times currently, and so appointments are required for in-person. And we have a plexiglass build-out, so advocate sits on one side, person sits on the other side, and we can talk in person. But certainly on the phone is easy. And so we're Monday through Friday, 9 to 4:30. We don't have a shelter. We don't have crisis line 24 hours. We don't work on the weekends. But we do our very best to get back to people same day or next day, next business day.
And these services come at no charge, correct?
That's absolutely true. All of our services are free of charge. And our workshops, our community trainings and events are also our holistic wellness programs. All of it's just free and open to the community. We're a nonprofit, so we've got very generous donors. And our executive director, Heidi Jackson, works tirelessly to apply for grants and all kinds of things to keep us afloat and keep food in our bellies so we can continue to offer our services free to the community.
How has your services been? Has there been an uptick in the pandemic, or has it stayed the same? I'm sure it's got to be different.
Interesting question to talk about, because for a while there, it was actually very quiet at the beginning of the pandemic because everyone was in lockdown. So people who were still in their domestic violence situation, who hadn't left, were not able to reach out safely for help because everyone was just at home. So for a while we saw that, and then we started to see a more normal uptick in activity and reach out. What was starting to get really apparent to us, our advocacy team was fielding lots of reach outs from folks who actually live off the island, because everywhere off island was so saturated that
really?
People weren't able to get into other advocates, other agencies, say in Renton or in Redmond or, you know, other areas, Pierce County as well. So they would call Dove and we'd say, oh, it sounds like you're in, you know, in Snohomish County. Have you tried XYZ? And they're like, oh, yeah, no, I can't even get in to see an advocate until 10 days from now. I need to talk to an advocate today. So it's been a really interesting sort of shift in our ability to provide services for people where we don't even live. And we've had to get familiar with the resources off island, even if those resources aren't readily available. But in the meantime, we're there to at least talk people through their situation to practice deep listening, to extend compassion, non-judgment, and to do some safety planning and safer planning with people in the meantime while they're waiting to meet with an advocate or get their needs met where they are.
So you mentioned text, phone, email, website. How about a Zoom meeting?
We can absolutely do that. We will do Zoom or Google Meets. And so if it feels better or more convenient or safer for people to do it that way, we've totally done that before. Okay. And we can meet with one or more advocates. So Kyle Britz is our fabulous, fantastic, well-resourced legal advocate. So a lot of times people are looking for housing resources or legal resources or both. So Kyle is not an attorney, but he definitely knows his way around the dance of the court system with regard to family law and domestic violence protection orders and things of that nature. So we do a lot of legal advocacy, even if people don't live on the island, just helping people. Even if people have an attorney, it's nice for them to also have a DV advocate just to make sure they're remembering to include things in their statements that points to the truth of the situation so that a judge who has no idea what's going on can easily see, oh, I see there's a pattern here of power and control that I need to be aware of.
Well, I can imagine somebody saying, well, I'm going to use the family attorney, and maybe he does real estate all his career, and he doesn't know to put these things. So having a DV legal advocate would be indispensable, I'd imagine.
Yeah, absolutely. I know a lot of attorneys have really loved working in partnership with our legal advocate or other DV legal advocates. And then back in the day when people used to physically go to court, DV legal advocates like Kyle would physically go to court with a survivor just to be a person, not speak for them, not do anything legal because we can't legally, but just to be a presence, a buddy with that survivor so they don't feel alone.
Oh, that's got to be just so reassuring to someone that's, you know, been in this big marble building all by yourself. It's got to be scary.
Yeah. And there's a lot of safer planning that does happen when people are navigating the court systems, you know, just because sometimes when someone leaves or challenges their partner with abusive behaviors and you move past that point, it's almost like poking the hornet's nest, you know? Sometimes it inflames abusive behaviors. But the upswing is that they can be more publicly on display. So it makes that abuser have to, it just flushes everything out of the hidden shadows, so to speak. So, you know, there's pros and cons, but again, it's really just unique to each survivor's person, each person's story and each person's needs. And that is a very fluid thing. It can change depending on their situation.
Anything else?
I think that's it. You know, it's a lot on that topic. And I just think we want to really send the message to our community that, you know, whether you leave or stay, please just reach out to us because we're here for you. We don't have an agenda for you. We're not the waiter that's going to bring you the salad when you ask for the pasta or the special of the day that you're allergic to. We really do want to listen to what everyone needs when they reach out to us. And again, if it's beyond our capability or if it's not what we offer, we will let you know or we'll help you find that resource if it's not us. We won't pretend to be your, you know, your shrink because we're not shrinks, right? We won't pretend to do what we don't do, but we really just want to know that we're not going to judge anybody for their decisions and we're here to help no matter what you decide to do. So we just want to send that message out and we're happy to talk more about safer planning if you give us a call if you need that.
All right. Well, Nin, this has been wonderful again. This is Dub Speaks, and we've been listening to Nin Gray, advocate for the Dub Project, about her safer planning topic. And anything else you would like to say?
That's all. Thanks for having me back on, Chris. It's been a pleasure.
It always is. Well, thank you, Vashon. This will be up on the Vashon website. Just go to the show pages. You'll see Dub Speaks. And then you can just stream this show at any time you like. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.